So to have such a retreat is actually involves the work of many, many people. And I really, really want to thank everyone. I really want to thank all the providers. It's many beings we have to keep in mind when we do those retreats. So, and we rejoice in the causes and conditions for all of you to be here. And we really thank you for the support, because we need the support to survive, to be able as a center to spread the Dharma through the kindness of our teachers and through your kindness. So thank you very, very, very much. Have a wonderful, wonderful retreat. If you need any help, write. And otherwise, have a wonderful time. And I hand over to Geshe-la. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Hello, everybody. For me, it's my first Zoom experience, I have to say. So it's a bit new to me. So thanks to Land of Joy of hosting it, and Jamyang London helping out with the technical issues of this retreat. So yeah, it's called a retreat, but it's different than being at the Land of Joy, I suppose. I've never been there yet, but because everybody's in their own living room or back home, so it's slightly different, but try to have a kind of discipline throughout the coming days in order to make a kind of retreat kind of situation. So I was planning to go with the 12 links as the main subject. And for that purpose, you have received a few documents. So one is a sheet with the drawing of the Wheel of Life. So that drawing of the Wheel of Life you can use together with the audio recordings of the Wheel of Life teachings we did last year in China. So that's available for you to listen to and think about in your spare time in the coming days. So if you can do that on the site, then I don't have to explain that part. Why is that? Because I was planning to go over two texts by Arya Nagarjuna. Two chapters from the text of fundamental wisdom. Yeah, so two chapters Honus Dalai Lama always recommends and teaches quite often. So I was planning to explain those two chapters. So one is the chapter 26 on the 12 links of interdependence, and chapter 18 on emptiness. Yeah, because without emptiness, it's a bit difficult to eliminate suffering, yeah, so to eliminate ignorance. So that's more or less the content of the coming few days. Yeah, so if you use that sheet with the Wheel of Life, with the drawings together with the audio recordings yourself, then we will go over the other texts of the two chapters of Nagarjuna. So that's, yeah. And then, of course, if you have time and people are familiar with the Lamrim, so then, of course, Lama Tsongkhapa's great exposition, or Lamrim Chemo, has very nice quite a brief explanation, as well as Pabongka Rinpoche's Lamrim. So that's, you can also use as a reference. Then the two texts we cover by Nagarjuna are also translated, and there's a commentary available by His Holiness Dalai Lama called The Middle Way. Yeah, it's a wisdom publication book, so you can, if you have it, you can read it, otherwise you can go over it later on. So why the 12 links? That's the question. Why did we choose to go over this subject? Because if you read in Lama Tsongkhapa's Lamrim Chemo, then it quotes, first of all, from Buddha Sakyamuni, that from the Shadless Proud Sutra, that the Buddha considers this as extremely important. And in many sutras also, it says, if you understand interdependence, and then particularly these 12 links, you will understand the Four Noble Truths. If you understand the Four Noble Truths, you know the truth of suffering, the origin of suffering, and how to abandon it. Yeah, so that's a particularly important quotation you can find throughout all the scriptures, as well as certain quotations they go to. If you understand, or if you see the 12 links of interdependence, you see the Dharma. If you see the Dharma, you see the Buddha. Yeah, so that's countless kind of things explaining the 12 links from its origin. And also in Vinaya scriptures, the Buddha asked Ananda and many other of his direct disciples to make drawings on the walls outside of the monastic institutions and temples, same year in Jamyang, those who are familiar with Jamyang, as soon as you come inside, there's a big tanga with the 12 links and the wheel of life, because that helps us to understand samsara. And another important quotation Lama Tsongkhapa uses in the Lamrim Chemo is from So this teacher, Sublime Teacher, wrote actually a very interesting text, a Lojong text on the 12 links. And then from the context of seeing the 12 links as striving for a better human rebirth, yeah, the first scope of the Lamrim, because understanding the nature of the suffering of the lower states of existence. And then if you understand that well, you will prevent yourself from falling into those states and make sure you get to higher states in order to develop yourself a little bit more. And not only a little bit more, all the way up to the spiritual part of enlightenment. And that's also the 12 links, traditionally speaking, is also explained in the milling scope, as you know, in order to understand the suffering of samsara and to generate the wish to get out of it. In a similar way, also the same author, Geshe Nichenpo Buchunwa, he also says that if you contemplate the suffering of sentient beings, then you can generate great compassion. Yeah. So based on the 12 links, all the three scopes of the Lamrim can be put into practice. So that's why I was thinking to go over that subject. But of course, we start with the basics. So the 12 links is a very in-depth kind of explanation of the Buddhist teaching. In monastic institutions, like where I was hanging out for the last, 2 decades, we studied the 12 links for about, let's say, 2 to 3 months. So here we have, how many days? Six days. So you cannot expect too much from it, but at least you get an overview, right? And so the title of the course is slightly different. Yeah, so it's kind of more general title, how we create our own reality. Yeah, so basically the reality on the more deeper level, we just went over by understanding samsara a little bit more, so that we'll explain. But also on the more day-to-day life reality, we also gonna talk about. Yeah, so yeah, I try to make it not too academic and also try to not make it too simple, because quite a few people of you already studied the Lamrim quite well. So that's a little bit of the introduction of the subject. And yeah, as I try to make it a little bit formal, for me, I said it's my first Zoom experience. Just this morning, I woke up a little bit kind of this feeling when a film crew came to set up to make a documentary about my life, because there's not that many people. It was a film crew from the Netherlands who walks around like this, you know, it's kind of quite a few. So this morning also when we did a few shooting, I was a bit kind of shake up, you know. So today also a little bit like that.
Geshe-la, can I interrupt you, please?
Yeah.
There's a crackly sound and I'm wondering if it's your mic at all. It's not, The sound isn't as clear as we would hope. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe it's the movement. I try to sit still. I've been advised yesterday.
Yes.
Is that an hour or not?
It is still crackly, yes, but I'm not sure that we can do anything so much.
Yeah. Maybe it's the vibes. Huh?
Some people have unmuted themselves.
No, yeah.
Some people are unmuted. So that could be a feedback problem.
That's what I did. Is better already or not?
It's still crackly, unfortunately. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, not to worry. Thank you so much.
Okay, yeah. yeah. The setup is not, it's kind of, it works, but, you know, it's okay. Yeah, so sorry for that, for the cracking sound. So that's basically the introduction of the subject. Then, as I said, it's good to make it a little bit formal, right? So, So also for yourself, you know, if you do retreats, you do retreats with body, speech, and mind. Yeah, so that means that you put yourself in a particular place. There's the retreat of the body. Then you try not to hang out and talk too much with other people in order to keep your mind focused, and that's kind of the retreat of the speech, right? That's quite easy to do for most of us. The retreat of the mind is a bit more complicated. Yeah, if you put yourself in a room and you have to think about things without getting distracted, it's a more difficult task than not to talk or not to walk around on the street. Yeah, so so thanks to the, not only thanks to the lockdown, but we basically inside at the moment, and so there's all kind of things happening in the world around us that can also help us to reflect about the points we're going to discuss. Yeah, so we can put it into practice as well. So yeah, try to make a bit kind of serious situation for yourself. Not serious in the sense of getting too strict or tight, but serious in the sense of having a relaxed mind, but let your mind stay on the Dharma. Yeah, that's the real way of being serious with the Dharma. Not to, you know, some people when they want to be serious, they get very tight, you know. So that's not the real retreat. Yeah, the real retreat is a very interesting threefold advice of the Kadampa Geshes, where they say, have great vision. Right? So then if you have a big picture of future lifetimes, liberation, enlightenment, you know, then these kind of little things, problems we have in life, like virus or you know, sickness, they, in that big picture, you know, they're just a part of a very small aspect of this particular life, right? So it's not really such a big thing to be stressed out about. So having a fast vision, you know, just take obstacles into the path. Then the second advice is make plans, right? So we have to make plans and our spiritual path. So now I do this course and I contemplate it, try to put it into practice and move on. That's also very important. And then the third advice is what I just was referring to, is this kunyang means relax, you know? So also Shantideva is very skillful. If you read his chapter on effort, that there's a possibility of getting too tight. So it's important to relax. So in the retreat, I just did a retreat. Maybe my retreats are too relaxed, so then I get too lazy. But if the mind is relaxed, then it's much more beneficial to contemplate. Yeah, so that's why we have this retreat of body, speech, and mind. So try to have a little bit of a similar attitude in the coming weeks. Coming days, so and to make it a little bit more formal also, I thought we do some prayers in the beginning and at the end of the sessions. So today we do a little bit more the traditional way in order, because it's the first day to start, and then maybe from tomorrow onwards I will, you know, abbreviate a little bit more because of the time constraints. So though most of you I think are familiar with the prayers, so the best thing to do these prayers is, if you have, you can see it on the screen, it's perfect. So prayers are not something just to be recited, you know. When His Holiness gives sometimes commentaries which carry certain commitments, you know, Vajrayana practice, then His Holiness often says, in Tibetan it says katun, means, you know, to express from the mouth, you know, to recite, basically, to recite. So prayers, because we recite in order to do things together, but the recitation by itself is not enough. You have to, so then it's when you say, okay, the commitment is to recite this and this particular prayer, but actually not just let the words come out of the mouth, but you have to meditate. Yeah. So that means that if you recite a prayer, we have to contemplate the meaning. Yeah. So that's why I thought we do a few traditional prayers in the beginning, because the original teachings of the Buddha, the prayers to Buddha Sakyamuni. Yeah. And then the Heart Sutra as being one of the main basic teachings of the Prajnaparamita. And then after that, the foundation of all the qualities, because this presentation of the 12 links, as I just explained, falls into the threefold category of the three scopes of the Lamrim, right? Though I will explain also so things related to day-to-day life, but actually the real origin comes with that. So we have to know where we are in the Lamrim. So from that point of view, we do the foundation of all the qualities. And then, short mandala and refuge. Yeah, so then, in the prayer book. Yeah, so, okay. So when you do these prayers, then basically, we first have to generate correct motivation. Yeah, so that's the beginning of every activity. especially spiritual kind of activity, very essential to make sure we have the correct motivation or correct intention. So try to think about the three scopes of the Lamrim we thought about for those who can, in relation with the 12 links, for example, for that purpose we here in order to achieve future precious rebirths, in order to walk towards the paths of liberation and enlightenment. Yeah, so try to make that a kind of motivation. If you're not familiar with these aspects of the spiritual part, or you don't consider yourself as a Buddhist yet, that's also perfectly fine. Then you just think about to develop yourself a little bit more and try to understand more about the mind, consciousness, and its associated mental factors, destructive emotions, constructive states of mind, as we're going to talk about as well, in order to train your mind to achieve more states of more kind of sustainable happiness, so to say, and not just temporary, and to eliminate suffering. And if you understand those trainings well, then in these kind of difficult circumstances of you know, the corona pandemic or climate issues, then we can relate it much better. We can understand it much better. And that if you apply it well to mind training, then of course there's a physical aspect that makes life difficult. Yeah, being isolated or being without a job or having all the difficulties in life. But our mental attitude can make a big difference. Yeah, so there might be some physical difficulties involved, but if we're mentally strong, then we can prevent a lot of mental suffering. And there's not no need to suffer mentally, yeah, so that we can do something about it. Yeah? So try to generate either of these motivations for yourself, yeah? So either with three scopes of the Lamrim, or just, you know, to eliminate suffering in the best way you can, and try to help others to do the same. Yeah? So try to motivate yourself in these lines. And then think that in front of yourself, you're not just in your room or wherever you're sitting in kind of a special place. And, you know, it's very clean. And if you have some offerings made and for, you know, the holy beings, then perfect. And then in front of yourself, you can try to visualize Sakyamuni Buddha, if you feel comfortable with, or if you're Buddhist. And then you're seated on top of a snow lion supported throne supported by snow lions. There's a lotus, sun and moon disc, and on top of that is Sakyamuni Buddha. His right hand is on his right knee and touching the moon disc. His left is in his nap and holds a begging bowl filled with nectar. And then his whole body is made out of golden light, and he wears the robes of a fully ordained monk, and he has a very peaceful and smiling face. Yeah, so, and those who have a teacher, you can imagine he is one with your own teacher, and he's very pleased by you being here and by you doing this practice. Yeah? So visualize Sakyamuni Buddha like that in front. And then surrounding yourself, all the sentient beings of the six realms, experiencing the different difficulties, physical difficulties, mental difficulties of the different rebirths. But you can just imagine them in human form. And then focusing upon their suffering, try to generate compassion, try to generate a wish for them to be free of suffering. And in order to eliminate their suffering, that's why you're here. And that's why you're going to do the prayers. And so try to reflect in that way. And then by reflecting in that way and visualizing in that way, then we will recite the praise to Sakyamuni Buddha. Guru, teacher, Bhagavan, Tathagata, Arahat, perfect, complete Buddha, perfect in knowledge and great and good conduct, God and all of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be subdued, teacher of gods and humans, to you, the Buddha, the Bhagavan, the glorious conqueror Sakyamuni, I prostrate and make offerings and go for refuge. Guru, teacher, Bhagavan, Tathagata, Arhat, perfect, complete Buddha, perfect in knowledge and good conduct, Sagata, know of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be subdued, teacher of gods and human beings, to you, the Bhagavan, the glorious conqueror, Sakyamuni, I prostrate, make offerings and go for refuge. Guru, teacher, Bhagavan, Tathagata, Arhat, perfect, complete Buddha, perfect in knowledge and good conduct, Sagata, know of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be subdued, teacher of gods and humans, to you, the Buddha, Bhagavan, the glorious conqueror, Sakyamuni, I prostrate, make offerings, go for refuge. When, O Supreme amongst humans, you were born in this earth, you played out in seven strides, and then said, I am supreme in this world. To you, O wise, and I prostrate. With pure bodies, formed supremely pure, wisdom ocean like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the three worlds, winner of the best, savior, to you I prostrate. With the supreme signs, face like a spotless moon, color like gold, to you I prostrate. Dust free like you, the three worlds are not, incomparable wise one, to you prostrate. The Savior having great compassion, the teacher having all understanding, the field of merits with qualities like a vast ocean, to you, the one gone to dustness, I prostrate. The purity that frees from attachments, the virtue that frees from the lower realms, the one part, sublime, pure reality, the Dharma that pacifies, I prostrate. Those who are liberated and also who show the path to liberation, the holy field qualified to realizations who are devoted to the moral precepts, to use the blind community intending virtue, I prostrate. Do not commit any unwholesome actions, engage in perfect wholesome actions, subdue your mind thoroughly. This is the teaching of the Buddha. A star, a deflected view, a butter lamp, flame, an illusion, a dewdrop, a water bubble, a dream, lightning, cloud, see conceiving phenomena like this. To these merits, may all sentient beings attain the rank of all seeings to beautiful faults and be delivered from samsara ocean, covered by the waves, aging, sickness, and death. Then next page, Heart Sutra. I prostrate to the three noble, rare, sublime ones. Thus I heard at one time, the Bhagavan was dwelling on a mass on Virgin Mountain in Rajgir, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound reflection. Also at that time, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara looked upon the very practice of the profound reflection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also empty of inner nature. Then, through the power of the Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said to the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara, how should any son of the lineage train who wishes to practice in the activities of the profound reflection of wisdom? He said that, and the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara said to the Venerable Shariputra, Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice activities of the profound reflection of wisdom should look upon it like this. Correctly and repeatedly beholding those five aggregates also as empty of nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, and form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, consciousness factor, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristics, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not defined, and not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness, there's no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no consistent factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visible form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomena. There is no eye element, and so on, and up to and including no mind element and no mental consciousness element. There's no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, and up to, including no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similar, there's no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There's no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there's no attainment, bodhisattvas rely and dwell in perfection of wisdom. The mind is without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifestly completely awakened, unsurprised, perfect, complete, enlightened, in reliance on perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, don't surprise mantra, the mantra equal to non equals, the mantra that truly pacifies all suffering should be known as a truth since it's not false. The mantra of perfection of wisdom is declared, Tayata, Gata, Bhagata, Parasangata, Bodhisoha. Shariputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, should train in the found perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commended the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that. It is like that one should practice the profound perfection of wisdom, just as you have indicated, even that the gods rejoice. The Bhagavan, having thus spoken, the venerable Shariputra, the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Virvisvara, and those surrounding there entirely, along with the worlds of gods, humans, asuras, and Gandhavas, were overjoyed and highly praised, and spoken by the Bhagavan. Line phrase, Dakini prayer. Next page. From the holy supreme realm of Gajara, you will possess power of clairvoyance and magical emanation. Look after practitioners without distraction, as would you do for your own child. To the host of the kings of the three abodes, I prostrate by by the teachings of the noble three rare sublime ones, possessing the power of truth, may hindrance be averted, may they be eliminated, and may they be pacified. May all enemies and negative forces opposed to the Dharma, and may the host of 80,000 obstacles be pacified. May we be free and from harmful conditions to the Dharma, and may all excellence be in accordance with the Dharma, and may we be auspicious and perfect happiness here and right now. The foundation of all good qualities is a kind and perfect guru. Correctly devoting to him is the root of the pot. By clean seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely upon him with great respect. Understanding that the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once, is difficult to find again, and is greatly meaningful. Please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly day and night existence. This life isn't as impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like the shadow follows the body, the reasons of black and white karma follow. Finding firm and definite conviction in this, please bless me always to be careful, to abandon even the slightest negative actions and accomplish all virtuous deeds. Seeking samsaric pleasures is the door towards suffering. They are uncertain, cannot be relied upon. Recognize these shortcomings, please bless me to generate a strong wish for the bliss of liberation. Led by this pure thought, mindfulness, alertness, and great caution arise. The root of the teaching is keeping the Pratimoksha vows. Please bless me to accomplish this essential practice. Just as I have fallen into the sea of samsara, so have all modern migratory beings. Please bless me to see this and train the Supreme Bodhicitta and bear the responsibility of freeing transmigratory beings. Even if I develop only bodhicitta, but I do not practice the three types of morality, I will not achieve enlightenment. With my clear recognition of this, please bless me to practice the bodhisattva vows with great energy. Once I've pacified distraction to wrong objects and correctly analyzed the meaning of reality, please bless me to generate quickly within the mind stream the unified part of karma abiding, special insight. Having become a pure vessel by training in the general part, please bless me to enter the holy gateway of the fortunate ones, the supreme virtue vehicle. At a time, the basis of accomplishing the two attainments is keeping pure vows in Samaya. As I've become firmly convinced of this, please bless me to protect these vows and pledges like my life. Then, having realized the importance of the two stages, the essence of the Vajrayana, by practicing it with great energy, never giving up the four sessions, please bless me to realize the teachings of the Holy Guru. Like that, may the Gurus to show the noble paths, and may the spiritual friends who practice their long lives. Please bless me to pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances, and all my lives never be separated from perfect Gurus. May I enjoy the magnificent Dharma by completing the qualities of stages and paths. May I quickly attain the state of Vajrayana. Then there is a short mandala on page number 22. Sajibhagi Jojimedu Dramri Ralinji Nidhi Sangye jenga mihidembu vahari Dagunanda jenga jenba jenga Ram, Guru Ramadana Kamiyataya. Sangye Chudan Soni Tsunam La Janjo Bada Dani Kyazuchi Dagi Juji Gibbe Tsunam Gi Dola Penje Sangye Doma Sangye Chudan Soni Tsunam La Janjo Bada Dani Kyazuchi Dagi Juji Gibbe Tsunam Dola Penje Sangye Doma Sangye Chudan Soni Tsunam Janju Bada Dani Gyazuji Dagi Chusin Kimbe Tsunan Dola Penche Sangye Doba Shu. Can I just engage with that? I should promise you couldn't tell a chance. So there's a praise to the Buddha. His Holiness always recites at the beginning of the teaching. And that translates as you moved out of compassion, you eliminate wrong views. You teacher of the sublime Dharma, to Gautama Buddha, I pay homage. So that kind of quotation actually comes from the same text, Fundamental Wisdom of Nagarjuna, and well, chapter 27, if I'm right. So that summarizes very essential points. Moved out of compassion, because the Buddha taught these teachings not to become a very renowned, a very famous person, or have, you know, all kind of worldly kind of concerns or motivations. Yeah. So the Buddha taught these teachings in order to eliminate suffering, and not any type of suffering, all forms of suffering, right? Not just the temporary suffering we're experiencing, most of us experiencing because of a virus that is in this particular planet on a particular time for maybe, you know, a period of time or a few months or a year or something like that, or maybe a bit longer. But, you know, so, that's not the only, that's not the root, the real suffering the Buddha focused upon. Yeah, the Buddha's focused upon a more intense and more substantial form of suffering, the cause of suffering, right? And that we're going to talk about during the course as well. So the Buddha so kindly understood not only suffering and the suffering of the physical suffering we have or the mental suffering we have, but the Buddha completely understood the cause of all this, you know? And having understood that completely, then he generated so much compassion for all sentient beings by understanding that all sentient beings have a capacity to develop. Yeah, we are all human beings. We have good qualities and we make mistakes. Yeah, we can develop those good qualities. We have potentials in our mind. Yeah, so we can develop good states of mind and eliminate wrong forms of consciousness and destructive emotions. Yeah, so the Buddha saw that potential in the minds of all sentient beings. And having seen that potential, the Buddha generated so much effort over a very long period of time to understand the mind. Yeah, so Buddhism is basically mind science. Yeah, it's not just a kind of any type of science or academic kind of field of knowledge. It's a kind of mind science that helps us to understand the mind more and to achieve more sustainable forms of happiness and to eliminate suffering. So that's why the Buddha actually started a spiritual path. And he saw the suffering and he saw the possibility of taking it away, because our mind is changeable. We have this potential to change and we have this potential to develop good qualities of mind and eliminate incorrect forms of consciousness and eliminate destructive emotions.
Yeah. Your microphone is cracking. We're not able to trouble solve. Okay. So one option is we just take a 3-minute break.
Okay.
We unplug the system
and we plug
and
it.
We use the audio.
Yeah. Is okay for you? You have a cup of tea?
Yeah. I think it's better without the mic, Geshe-la. So yeah. Maybe just unplug the mic, don't use it. It's clearer. Thank you.
No problem.
Me. So we're going to take just a 3-minute break to unplug the sound system and just use the computer audio. And then this afternoon, we'll do more tests.
Thanks, Fabienne. Thank you. Time for a stretch. Actually, Geshe-la, if you just talk, just say, let's see what it's like now. Yeah. Oh, no. I think you're on mute. Now we can't hear anything.
And we can try also to put maybe not touch any.
Yeah, sometimes the battery is. You can check if it's better.
Does it still crack?
It's still cracking, or it's better now? Anybody checking? Hello?
Wendy?
Hi. Is it better or?
No, I think it's better without a mic at all.
Okay.
Do you want to try it just with your ordinary voice?
No. What about this?
Good.
on the...
So, can you hear us?
I think it would be better without a mic at all.
We don't have a mic.
With the voice.
At the moment, we don't have a mic. Is it better now or not?
It's better without the mic, yes.
Yeah, okay, sure. Let me go like this.
Thank you.
Okay, no problem.
As long as it's not too much of a strain on your voice, but it's better.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I can raise it a bit more.
It's fine.
Is it, is okay like this or not?
There's a bit of an echo, yes. So, yeah.
You can hear me now clearly? If I talk.
Yes, much better. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, take care.
Yeah, we're fine. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Geshla.
Yeah, everybody's there? Back from the 3 minutes break? It became four. Yeah?
He will if you unplug the speakers.
Yeah, everybody ready?
There's an echo. There's an echo. I don't know if Fabienne's mic's on or something. All the mics are muted, but...
We unplugged another set of speakers. Is it better now or not?
Well, there's an echo.
Echo is there.
That's the problem with the...
But it's less crackly.
Maybe it's a gompa.
Yeah, it's a gompa.
It's a court. You know, the judge used to sit here in the courthouse.
It's less crackly anyway.
It's better now or not? I mean...
There's no crackle. It's now just the echo, but it's okay. I think it's better.
Yeah, for the rest of the morning we go like this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. I lived in a country for more than 2 decades where, you know, you have these things all the time. So it's okay for me, at least. So yeah, nothing is perfect in samsara, even if you have the best types of equipment. Everything is in the nature of impermanence. So yeah, so everybody ready? So we just finished the prayers and I was explaining the praise to the Buddha and by Nagarjuna. So moved out of compassion, you eliminate wrong views. Yeah, so the Buddha, Nagarjuna praises the Buddha not to eliminate wrong views of others, right? He eliminated the views we all have. Because destructive emotions are basically not in accordance with reality. Yeah? So because of these destructive emotions, we experience suffering. So whatever destructive emotion comes to mind, if it's attachment, jealousy, pride, or anger, aversion, even more modern types of destructive emotion, like, you know, fear, anxiety. So those states of mind basically are not in accordance with reality, right? They're misunderstandings of reality. And that's what the Buddha actually did. He eliminated those views. Because if you eliminate those incorrect forms of consciousness and generate more constructive states of mind, then the mind improves, right? Yeah. So that's why I said in the introduction, Buddhism is kind of mind science. So that's why the Buddha, out of understanding the cause of suffering, but understanding these destructive emotions together with its cause, the Buddha said, okay, these have to be eliminated. They have to be taken away. Yeah, so that's why Nagarjuna praises that aspect. You who eliminate wrong views. Teacher of the sublime Dharma. So that means that the Buddha didn't teach only about, you know, the mind and mental factors and, you know, kind of psychology, but the Buddha went a little bit deeper. Yeah, he let us understand what is actually the cause of suffering. What are the causes? What are the conditions? How do we suffer mentally? How do we suffer physically? Yeah, so that's what the Buddha taught in the teachings on dependent origination from a conventional point of view, and how to eliminate those wrong forms of consciousness by correct understanding of reality. Yeah, so the ultimate reality of emptiness, as we're going to talk about maybe starting on Tuesday. That's the Sublime Dharma. Yeah, so by understanding dependent origination, right, so you can see, Buddhism is very scientific. So most of you know my background a little bit. You know, I started as a young student in the Netherlands, studying hydrology and going to house parties all night long in the big cities and going back home in the morning, have breakfast with your parents in the weekend, and sleep the rest of the day. And Monday, go back to college, so university. So that was my life in the beginning. So I have a little bit of scientific background, mainly in mathematics and statistics. So that attracted me a lot in the beginning, you know, this kind of research, mind research. Also, the Buddha said, don't accept my teachings because I'm well known or out of faith or respect for me. You should examine my teachings. You know, don't just swallow it. As long as this morning in live stream teaching, I was planning not to, to sleep in, but then I woke up and then, yeah, I just watched it. So, because, yeah, for me, direct teaching is, I'm a very traditional kind of person in this in the Buddhist tradition. So, I only watched two YouTubes of Lama Zopa Rinpoche and this morning live stream of His Holiness. That's the only things I watched on, you know, teaching I watched actually on the screen. So now I'm sitting on the other side for the first time. So, but basically, as one's also said this morning, it's kind of the tradition, the Tibetan tradition that actually originates in the Nalanda tradition of India, is a tradition based on logic. So as one said, just don't chew whatever comes to you, but, you know, you have to bite and examine, you know. So that's the kind of tradition that is based on logic, based on felt cognition, epistemology, analyzing things, don't accept, you know, see if it's true or not. So that's what the Buddha fundamentally said in many occasions, don't accept what I say. Because, you know, people think I'm special, or people say I'm an enlightened being. You should examine if it's true or not. And it's true, you know, for us, same thing. Those who are familiar with the Lama Rim, if you read a book, like a novel, like a spiritual book or a book about emotions, it's, oh, yeah, interesting, yeah, true, yeah, interesting, yeah, true. Then it doesn't have impact on the mind, right? It just kind of stays very intellectual. But if you analyze, you read one page, you analyze if it's true or not, you examine, take daily example out of your daily life and see if it's true. Are these destructive emotions really destructive? What does anger do? What does attachment do? Jealousy, pride, anxiety, fear? You know? So that's why there's a lot of emphasis on self-research. You study the teachings, put it into practice. So that same true with modern times is basically we're facing now with, you know, the virus, people afraid, fear, because they didn't expect this to happen. They're grasping to this kind of, you know, permanent aspect of life will be always the same. You know, so that's not the case, right? Because nothing can be always the same. Nothing can exist from its own side, always being the same. You know, it's all in the nature of impermanence, right? So the virus comes, the virus abides and disintegrates, or there's a vaccination. Oxford University making incredible progress. So there's possibilities, right? So that means nothing exists forever. It's true for our temporary happiness. That's true for our temporary suffering. That's true for depression. That's true for fear. That's for anxiety, for all disturbance of mind. They come, abide, and disintegrate. You know, so that's a thing the Buddha also saw and said, you have to examine it. Yeah, so that's an important aspect. So you moved out of compassion, you eliminate the wrong views, yeah, the wrong views of the incorrect forms of consciousness. Yeah, you said that most of our destructive emotions, right, the minds that gives us problems, is not in accordance with reality. And it's not only a Buddhist view. There's many worlds in the world, many scientific, there's a lot of scientific research been done. As Holmes always quotes Professor Aaron Beck, who is into cognitive behavior therapy. So Aaron Beck is a professor in the University of Pennsylvania. He also came to a very interesting conclusion. He said that from a destructive emotion like anger, for example, a person generates anger to a particular individual. Yeah, so the picture that person has of that individual he's getting angry at, or she's getting angry at, that picture is not the person. Very interesting comment. There's a mentally fabricated idea which we believe is reality, but it's not. And the same professor, Aaron Beck, also said that in those strong afflictions or strong destructive emotions, when there are, so to say, an emotional hijack, Are you completely overpowered by anxiety or fear or being angry at a person or situation? Actually, this professor says that 90% of what's being seen in this mental image is mentally fabricated. It's not with that person you're getting angry at. It's mentally fabricated. You know, it's kind of 90%. So only 10% is true. So we can look at a daily example. You know, if you have a person you dislike, or you get really agitated with, or situation you get agitated with, this person or this situation also has positive aspects. So let's say there's, let's say there's 60% qualities and 40% faults, right? From a person or particular situation or project. Yeah? But we don't like to see those 60% quality and 40% faults. We like to see 70% or 90% faults and only 10 or 30% qualities. So that means we mentally fabricate an ideal reality that doesn't exist, but believe into it. We believe it. So that's true for all these kind of destructive emotions. It's not in constant reality, and that's why it causes us so many problems. Yeah. So, so light is, I don't know, people can still me, no, they have a light problem. Yeah. So you can see my freshly shaved hat. You know. Pray for the clouds to come. Normally, I pray for the sun to come, but today, on that side, clouds to come. Anyway, so, so that means that these destructive emotions are not in accordance with reality, and that's why they cause problems. And that's not only a Buddhist perspective, but that's also been proven by this professor from the University of Pennsylvania. And there's not only one, there's many. And we can examine our own, in our own way, as I just explained, you know. Just check your mind, and it's true, if you get agitated with a person, and you only see the faults. And some, one of your friends comes by, pats you on the shoulder and says, come on, this person is not that bad, or this situation is not that bad, or the virus is not that bad, you know. So, and then you say, no, not true. Because you don't like to believe that aspect of reality that actually exists, you see. So if you don't believe that positive aspect of reality that exists and only see the negative aspect of that particular situation or person, then of course it causes a problem. You know? And it's true for anxiety and fear, same thing. You know, you think, oh, something's gonna happen. But maybe it's not true, maybe nothing's gonna happen. You know? So when I came back from, before I came back to London, I was in Nepal, in Eastern Nepal, in a place called Maratika. Place related with the Guru Pemisambhava, a few caves there, very, very precious place with very interesting things in the rocks to be seen. So anyway, cut the story short, so the road to that place is very basic. So it's like mountain passes, go to rivers when there's no bridge, you know. So when I was on the road, I had quite some fear, to be honest, you know, because there's nothing to stop the car from falling off, you know, 500 meters down, you know, maybe 200. But so, on the way up, we had the best driver, I was being told, who could drive the whole way blindfold, I've been told. But we had an accident almost, so we hit the brakes. But I was quite impressed how we was hitting the brakes, lose it, and during the steam, we'll hit again the brakes. So just like half a meter of a cliff, you know, so. Yeah, so then you can see, there are some fear sometimes, but actually it didn't happen. So then there's some mental suffering, which is not needed. So you can just relax and enjoy the trip and hope for the best. Because if you fall off the cliff, the fear will not help anyway. You know, so you see, that's in our daily life, same thing. You know? If we want to solve a problem, but we see only the negative aspects of the problem situation, it's not going to help us. So that's kind of logic. Yeah, another logic His Holiness puts in one of His Holiness always quotes quite often in difficult situations, is that Ashanti Deva said, if you have a problem and you can solve the problem, then why worry? Solve it. You know? If you have a problem but you cannot solve it, then why worry? Because you cannot solve it, you have to deal with it, right? So that means that's a very simple, basic form of advice not that easy to put in practice, but if you can put it into practice, it's mind-boggling, right? So that proves that it's been proven that this advice works. So an example, I mean, because I have a scientific background, so in the medical school of Harvard, there's a person called Daniel Brown, and this person did research regarding post-traumatic stress disorder, and did research with Tibetans who've been imprisoned in Tibet for years or decades and being tortured and on the edge of, you know, dying. Not like a simple virus that we have, but every day there's a possibility of really dying or being tortured. You know? So you can imagine an average person after spending a few months in a situation like that, not only has physical difficulties coming out, but also mentally, right? But the majority, I don't say all of them, but the majority of the Tibetans who come out of this very difficult period in time, a period in life, and don't have even sign of post-traumatic stress disorder. So that's a sign that mind training can be put into practice and can bring great benefits. So then this scientist asks His Holiness for an explanation. And then His Holiness gives two explanations. He says, if you understand the law of cause and effect for karma, what we're going to talk about also during this course, and you see it as a part of that interactive kind of world of interdependence, okay, we don't have control over, but we play a role in this cause and effect relationships. Yeah. If you understand reality, acceptance of reality in that way, it prevents so much mental suffering. Another aspect, as only said, is those who practice bodhicitta, they can put it into practice by taking the suffering of others upon themselves. And then the mind becomes even more vast. You know, so then little problems won't arise. And that's not only a Buddhist thing, right? Also, there was in Italy, it was very difficult. Then there was the ventilators were being, I saw in the news, there was one priest, Christian priest, I think, and he was in his 70s or 80s, and they had to make a decision what to do with the ventilator because it was not enough. So he chose to give a ventilator to a younger person, and he died. So that's very similar. Mm-hmm. But he saw a photo of him. He looked, his face was kind of beaming, you know. So that means this person has a form of compassion for others. It's very strong. Mm-hmm. So if you generate that kind of mind, then hardships in life or difficulties in life become peanuts, you know. So, yeah. So that's kind of understanding this reality. So the acceptance is extremely important. Yeah. So another example I often use, my own mother. She knows now that I'm talking about her quite a bit. But So my mother does not really consider herself as a Buddhist, but her son is walking around like this. So there was a reason for that. So that's why she started reading things and. Now she's doing a whole Lamrim course because, yes, she's in lockdown. That's a few books I left home. I said, yeah, read if you like. So it's a very precious teaching. So, but when before she got into Buddhism more, but she was thinking about things, right? So then my father got cancer and it went very quick, within a few months, lung cancer. It was a bit of a shock. So most of my aunts and uncles, they thought my mother goes in depression for months because I had a very good relationship. Generally speaking, of course, they had problems, I know, but generally speaking, they had a very good relationship, always together. So then my father passed away, and then, of course, sadness was there, but my mother didn't go into depression, no depression. So the doctor was so amazed, and friends and family said, how is that possible? So then I asked my mother, how did you do that? So then she said, you know, I'm thinking about that in the purpose for some time and always thought this could happen, you see? So if you understand that reality, when that reality happens, there's no shock to the system. So that's why in Buddhism, we talk a lot about suffering and impermanence and death. So then people might think, oh, those Buddhists, they must be so depressed because they always talk about suffering and impermanence and death. But luckily now there's more awareness because people in the West, they start to see, if you understand it, there's less suffering at the time. Yeah? So that's why in the UK and rest of Europe, I think, there's kind of the death cafe developments that people talk elderly people, they talk about dying. It's not only elderly people, because we can also die, you know, not waking up tomorrow morning. Something like that. So it doesn't affect. But at least if you understand that reality, then there's always peace of mind, because when it happens, you're ready. Mm-hmm. So that's very helpful. Yeah. So that's a few things that Buddha said, or Nagarjuna said, you will eliminate wrong views. So if you understand reality, it brings so much peace of mind. Mm-hmm. So that's, you will eliminate wrong views. You teach me that. To Gautama Buddha, I pay homage. Yeah? So that's a kind of praise of Nagarjuna in this very profound text we're going to talk about. So same thing, Lama Tsongkhapa. So for this commentary, for this text by Nagarjuna, I used two commentaries so I could read a little bit myself over the last few days. One I read by Lama Tsongkhapa, right, the founder of the Kuluk tradition, who also, in a similar way, wrote a praise to the Buddha in praise of the dependent ordination after having understood the real reality, after having understood ultimate reality, and seeing that this will lead to ultimate happiness. This will lead all sentient beings beyond suffering. Seeing that aspect of reality, Lama Tsongkhapa generated so much faith in the Buddha and composed this text. Same, it's a bit longer than just the one verse I just mentioned, but it's about 40, I think. Anyway, so then you know actually where we come from. Yeah? So the Buddha taught these teachings, then Nagarjuna, about a few hundred years after the Buddha's passing, wrote different texts. Yeah? So there's a kind of collection of texts he wrote. So yeah, for this commentary, I said, so on this root text by Nagarjuna, I was reading Lama Tsongkhapa's commentary, which is actually translated into English, if you're interested, and well by Professor Naman Samtala from Varanasi. It's published also by Wisdom, I think, Ocean of Reasoning. Yeah, so people can read it. But also the text by His Holiness, I said, right? So His Holiness used to teach quite a bit, three chapters of this text by Nagarjuna, the Fundamental Wisdom, and as well chapter 18, 24, and 26. Yeah, so we're doing only 26 and 18. Yeah, so 26 deals with 12 links of interdependence. 18 deals with emptiness. For this only few days we're together, and we already 1 hour is already gone. It's like a sign of the permanence goes so quick that we cannot really do chapter 24. Also, there's like 40 something verses about Four Noble Truths. Maybe we can do another time. Yeah, so that's a little bit the origin and reason why we go over this text. So that means that we're going to study a text, you can listen to the audios of a text which is very, very profound, and it comes from a very authentic origin. Yeah? Nagarjuna, a few hundred years after the Buddha's passing, he wrote kind of a collection of reasonings, like six texts, mainly about dependent origination and emptiness. So from the point of view of psychology, as we just saw, the destructive emotions, there's a lot of relationships with modern forms of, you know, psychology or mind science. So that's why this one is Dalai Lama puts a lot of efforts over the last 2-3 decades to build bridges between science and Buddhist science. So that's why there's no books being translated. We have the Mind and Life Institute. That's very important. Because also Nagarjuna, from the point of view of ultimate reality, is being praised by some of the physicists in the field of quantum mechanics. Because how Nagarjuna describes ultimate reality is very, very similar to the modern findings in quantum physics. Right? That nothing exists from its own sight. Nothing exists out there all by itself. Same words. Mm-hmm. Where are you? Where are you? You know, you can use your own name. Where are you? There's a body, there's a mind, but you cannot really find a concrete self that appears. That we find also in the external objects, things appear very concrete to us. Our problems appear very concrete to us. Our emotions appear very concrete to us. People appear very concrete to us. But actually, it doesn't exist from their sight. Same the example we just used a person getting angry at somebody, that 90% of what is being seen is mentally fabricated. Our mind is capable of using reasoning, saying this person is bad because of this, because of this, because of this, because of this, because of this. And all the reasons are maybe not valid, but we believe they are valid, right? So that builds up this kind of mental image of the person. Inherently bad. Inherently not nice. Not nice. I don't like this person. But the same person we dislike, yeah, can be liked by somebody else, right? So that person called person A, we dislike. You see 90% false. Maybe 10 or less percent, a little bit kind of positive things. Somebody else looks at person A and sees maybe 80% qualities and 20% false. But person A is not different. It's not going to change to the way the person is looking at. Person A is the same, right? So it means that our perception of the person differs from somebody else looking at the same person. Right? So it means that person doesn't exist from its own side. 90% bad, or the other person says 60-70% qualities, because that cannot exist both at the same time. Yeah, so you can see a lot of things we believe is reality, but it's not. So we are capable of eliminating those wrong views. Yeah, that's why the Buddha said. Why? Because we have this potential in our minds to develop. Our mind is changeable. Destructive emotions are temporary. They come by a certain power of causes and conditions. They abide and disintegrate. Okay, so that means if we play with the right conditions, we can prevent them from coming up or prevent them from becoming stronger, right? So we can play with that. That's interdependence. That's dependent origination. Right? So that means that there's one aspect, why we can change the mind, the potential to change, right? So in neuroscience, like about, what is it, 10, 20 years ago, they thought if you're an adult past 20-something years, the brain doesn't change anymore. Right? But now they found out a neuroplasticity, the possibility for the brain to change, even when you're later in life. So if you can change the physical brain, then of course you can change the mind. So there's a lot of research being done within this Institute of Mind Alive by Richard Davidson, for example, examining meditators and what effects does meditation have on the brain, positive effects. So also I went to Pisa, Pomaya last year, Lanskop Institute, and we had a conference. I met a few professors of Pisa University in the field of neuroscience. It's very interesting to see what they're looking at. What states of mind disturb? And people with mental issues, what is the cause? And how can we can help that to change? Especially with neuroplasticity and the possibility to change is there. So that's one possibility for the mind to change. And yeah, I mention often in my talks also research. I mean, basically it's proof of the possibility to change people with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Jeffrey Swartz, who was a medical doctor. So Jeffrey Swartz, he saw that the medication didn't really work. So he went and used what we called mindfulness meditation, or a bit more precise. What he calls the power of mental force or the power of mental attention. So if you focus your mind on something, you can change. Right? So by listening to your brain or changing your brain, it's two different things. So that's a possibility. So in his research, very interesting to see, he teaches the people how to not listen to the thoughts that come to mind or that are produced by neurotransmitters or whatever explanation you give of a particular form of consciousness that comes into being by a release of neurotransmitters or any other process. It's very interesting. So he learns his patients to not listen to the thoughts, go to the garden instead of washing your hands, something like that. These days, sorry, we have to wash our hands, but if it becomes a kind of obsessive thing, then it becomes a kind of difficulty, right? So we have to count all the tins in the bar, no, we cannot go, but sometimes people have this kind of things. They have to do something, count, and they cannot prevent themselves from doing it. So there's a possibility of changing that. So if you can change those aspects, you can change the mind, right? Because these destructive emotions, they cause problems. ourselves and become unhappy. Yeah, in the Abhidharma literature, it says that destructive emotions are defined, or afflictions are defined, as that which disturbs the mind. It disturbs the mind from the point of view of losing the peace of mind. Because another potential we have is deep within the mind, underneath the surface, although destructive emotions, it's like a deep sea, right? On the surface, there's the waves moving back and forth. But deep down below, it's still. Yeah. Or you have a lake in the Alps. There was somebody from Austria. So in Austria, I remember when we went as young students. I mean, we were children, I should say. My parents took me to Austria in summer. Many Dutch people always went to Austria. So we went there, and then in the morning, you see this lake. Peaceful. Sunshine, the clouds, the trees, the mountain. Reflects so much peace. Everything is being clear and being seen. Yeah? So that's one aspect of the possibility of the mind. Yeah? But that same water, if you see the North Sea, yeah, the sea between the UK and the place where I'm born, in the Netherlands, can be very disturbing. Yeah? If you have wind force 8, 9, I was once on the boat with my father when it was quite windy. So the waves were like the height of the temple here. So with this kind of three stories. Mm-hmm. So the boat went down and they only saw waves or water, a wall of water. And then you went up. There was only water down below. So very frightening. But you can see the mind sometimes gets really disturbed. That's what we call this, you know, the emotions take over. There's no clarity. There's no possibility to think clearly. And that happens when we have this emotional hijack. Right. When emotions and destructive emotions are strong, especially anger, excitement, anxiety, fear, depression sometimes, attachment, jealousy, pride, the mind loses its clarity completely. You cannot think. Right? So that's another problem. So if you recognize a little bit more of this clarity of the mind, then you stay below the surface. Right? You don't get involved in these kind of destructive emotions. So that's true on the individual level, and that's true on the social level, and that's true on the universal level. Right? So individual level we can experience, on the social level we can see the criminals in the prisons. So when we're giving talks in the central prison of Bangalore, it has about 4,000 inmates. Very nice prison. Oh, sorry. I mean, compared to the idea I had of prisons. I had the idea of prisons having heavy armed police force, you know? Doors and bars. But there, of course, there were a few doors, and they gave us a stamp. They're very Indian. They gave a stamp on our lower arm. I don't remember if it was the right or left. So if you get a stamp with ink, it stays for a few days. So that means you can go out again. You know? So I went into that prison. And inside the compound, there's 4,000 inmates, I didn't see one police with a gun, only with a stick. Very interesting, very interesting. So the prisoners in there, they were allowed to study, do yoga, very peaceful. I mean, they had a problem, sometimes they closed because they had problems, but generally speaking, very peaceful. So then in that prison, there was our translator, a very nice person, just to sit with him and talk, just a nice person. But he killed another human being. He's a murderer, right? So he told me, very interesting comment. He said, for a few minutes, I was not in control. I made a mistake. He said, mind, there's a destructive emotion that came up. No one in control. He kills another human being. So that's our problems in life, not only on an individual level, but also on a social level. And that's true for the whole world. Right? So we can see the more people get agitated, we can see now in the news, politicians are fighting with each other, countries are fighting. No, you did it. No, you did it. So it's kind of, it's everywhere. But then you see there's still some kindness here and there, you know, and that's so moving. And then you can see that there's potential. Like, I'm following the news of India quite a bit because, you know, I spent half my lifetime in that country. And in Mumbai area, Maharashtra, you know, there's the virus is quite serious. I mean, still not too bad in India, but yeah, there's a lot of problems there. So this police officer, they're working so hard. And he is 10 o'clock in the evening. He was tired from the whole day. And this old lady came up to him and said, Hopperson, all the shops are closed. And my son has his birthday tomorrow. I need a birthday cake. So this officer, so kind, he was so tired. He called his friend, who was a baker. He got a cake, delivered it the next day, and the family was so happy. You see how he can deal with a very difficult situation to make people happy. So that means if you change the situation with positive thinking, then it's a totally different experience. So the officer could also say, yeah, no, I'm too tired, and go home. Bye-bye. So, that's all the things you can see. Right? So there are destructive aspects of the mind and positive. So just to come back, because I'm going out of track, we have the potential. Yeah? The Buddha said you have the potential to change because destructive emotions come up, abide, and disintegrate. Yeah? The mind can change, right? So we talked about it. And we talked about potential. Because deep inside the mind, there's no disturbance. We have the deep nature, or the most conventional subtle aspect of the mind is clarity. So that is not stained by destructive emotion. Like if you water, you put dirt in the water, you shake it, it's all mixed up. But if you put a glass down, the dirt will sink down, right? The water will come clear. So that means that, or the sky, now luckily because of our prayers, the clouds protect the sun from coming in here. Blinding you all on the other side of the screen. So that means that temporarily, the blue sky is still there, right? The temporary is kind of obscured, yeah, by the cloud. So our mind, same thing. Temporarily, there are destructive emotions, but they can be taken away because the blue sky is still there, you see? And they're not an innate part of the blue sky, you see? That's not a proof that we can eliminate destructive emotions because they're not an innate part of our mind. The inner part of the mind is actually positive. We can talk about it a little bit more later on. And another point, a few things for you to think about, another point is why we can eliminate destructive emotions is what we discussed already quite a bit, is because they're not in conscious reality. So we can eliminate wrong forms of consciousness, like my mother example. If you understand death and impermanence, then when it happens, sadness can be there, but the mind is not as disturbed. And there's no acceptance. Very difficult. You know? So you can see that if you understand reality, you can eliminate these destructive emotions, not straight away, but in levels. So same example of I always use the example of a train in India, but also here. I had the same experience. If you sit in a train and you think you're moving, but then because of the movement on the glass of another train on the other side. So you think you're moving, but actually, when you look at the track, at the platform, it's the other train that's moving, right? But first you think you're moving. You believe it, it's true. Then you look at the platform straight away with valid cognition, you see, well, it's the other train that's moving because the platform is still there. Then when your friend on the other side looks at you and said, oh, we're moving, right? Then you already said no, you don't believe it because you saw reality, you see that? So that means if you understand reality, then we can eliminate these destructive emotions as well. So it's not a possibility why the Buddha said, or why Nagarjuna said, you will eliminate wrong view, you see that? So it's a very optimistic view of the possibility of change, right? So, and the possibility of change also we see in daily life, it's not only in Buddhist thing. Because I was quite interested in prisons, because I was involved in a few projects in South India. But then I saw the news in I think Norway, Olden Prison, Norway, I think it was. They treat the inmates as brothers and sisters, not as prisoners. So the guides are not guards, but guides. Very interesting. They do things with the prisoners, from social aspects, very simple. Exercise, working together, they're only locked up like during the night, basically. During the day, they're very social events. So this prison, if you look at the data, the prisoners, the inmates who come out, it's about 20% that falls back to old habits. Right? So you can see, if you change your mind, there's a possibility of completely change your life, right? Of course, when the habit reactions are strong, also that we're gonna talk about, then it's a possibility of falling back. So we're gonna talk about that quite a bit in 12 links. So you can see this prison accomplice only 20%. Well, in the UK, it's about 50% of people who come out of prison fall back. All that in the US is about 70 to 80, because there's a lockup system and then you don't change, right? If you just, same for us, if you just say, oh, yeah, I cannot change my mind anyway, and you just sit there, then you're not going to change, right? So if you have the possibility to change and you take it into action, then you can change, right? Yeah. So that's a few positive things. I mean, as many positive things, but maybe it's too long. But yeah, as an introduction to, because some people might be a little bit newer to Buddhism being present today. So then I thought that's important to know, yeah? Especially with the scientific backup. It's important to know and to understand that these teachings of the Buddha is not just kind of, you know, kind of magical kind of stuff out of India, because it's kind of incredible. In 2,500 years ago, and the period after that, Nalanda Monastic University in India was very rich. Not only Buddhism, also different forms of Hindu philosophy, Jainism. Very, very interesting ways of analyzing how we can constructively achieve more happiness. Very interesting. Yeah, so the mind is very complex, as we know. So that's why don't think that within the 6 days, we have together, everything will be fine. So some people come to a course and think, oh, okay, everything will be fine. But, during the course, sometimes, oh, nice, interesting, yeah. But then you go back in life and then you see the mind didn't change completely. I have the same thing. I just did a retreat for about 2 months. I come out. If I sit down in my room, everything is, oh, yeah, true, yeah. But then I come out and then it's a challenge. You know, though, the more you do it, you can see the possibility to act in the way you trained your mind doing contemplation. So that's why we need the knowledge. That's why we're here. We need to analyze that knowledge. That's why we're going to do some meditation sessions, right? And after analyze that knowledge, we come to a conclusion, and then we focus on that conclusion. Right. So that's a very constructive way of moving your mind in a particular direction. So that's also we're going to do in some meditations. So we have two types of meditation, so you know. One type is kind of concentration meditation, or sometimes translated as placement meditation or focused meditation, right? So you place your mind on one object and keep your mind on that object. So you need concentration. Without concentration, it's very difficult to change. It's very difficult to absorb knowledge. So like I'm talking to you on the other side of the screen, I can't see you. So for me, normally when there's people sitting here, I can look around and see if people are getting bored, have to crack a joke or tell a story. So for me, it's kind of you behind there somewhere. So I don't know how you're sitting, where you're sitting. So that means that we can learn from, not only from hearing and think it's all true, but we gather the knowledge. That's why we're here. Right? But then that knowledge has to be examined. As I said, the Buddha said, don't accept my teachings out of faith, out of respect for me. Analyze it. That's exactly what the Buddha said. Analyze. So that's why we do an analytical meditation. So we do first concentration meditation, because without concentration, yeah. So now you're listening to what I'm saying. If your mind is somewhere, what you're going to do next week or what's on the news, and then you're not really concentrating, and then you don't, what I'm talking about, it goes in and goes out there, you know, so there's no much point, right? So then you have to concentrate. So that's why we do every day, we're going to try to do a little concentration meditation as well. Yeah. So in order to focus the mind, that's why we do concentration meditation. Then the concentration we use to analyze. That's why we do the next meditation, which is an analytical meditation. So meditation doesn't mean sit. When I was a university student, I was got into spirituality, not in Buddhism yet. So I stopped going to house parties and I started to study Chinese medicine, because I did some martial arts, and then from hardcore taekwondo to karate and then to Kung Fu and then to Tai Chi. And then I went to Chinese medicine. So I was really like spiritual kind of interest that the youngster has sometimes, you know. So then I was, we were lucky. I lived in a place called Velp, it's close to Arnhem in the Netherlands. So we lived with a few students in one house. So on the bicycle was about 10 minutes to the university and 10 minutes to the forest. I mean, forest in the Netherlands is quite relative, you know, it's kind of trees, basically, and a few hills. So sometimes I went there and then sit under a tree and meditate. But I was just sitting there, but I didn't really know what to do. So I was just wasting my time, basically. So that means we have to know how to analyze things. We have to know how to concentrate. So that's why we need those two meditations. And those two meditations are going to help us not only to change the mind, but also to understand the things we're going to study. So that's why just sitting and listening, absorbing, is good. Information is good. But you have to analyze, right? Yeah, so I said before, if those who study Lam Rim, if you just read a Lam Rim book, you know, and you just read it like a novel, oh, interesting, all true. Then you don't really follow this advice of the Buddha, and then it doesn't stay. Yeah, but if you read one page clearly, and then think about if it's true or not, and why is it true? And why is it not true? Analyze. So many things we're going to talk about in the coming days, you have to analyze. We're going to talk about past and future lifetimes. We're going to talk about the possibility to change, you know, neuroplasticity, the possibility to eliminate afflictions, how we are born in cyclic existence. Is that true or not? Analyze. That's what the Buddha said. Don't believe what I said. Analyze. Very interesting. So that's what we do. It is analytic meditation. Yeah, so in the tradition we come from, I just mentioned that I was hanging out for 2 decades in this monastic university called Sergei, and we spent hours and hours in the debate courtyard, firing questions, trying to get answers and not accepting the answers, and try to put in another direction and see what the person says. It goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, hours a day. You know, so it's a very intense and very noisy place. So it was a comment that I was open, Michelle, just recently. I didn't see the video, but I saw the comment. He said, some people think Buddhism is just quiet. But actually, it doesn't have to be quiet, because once the BBC came to our monastic university, and they said, oh, we've never been in such a noisy place before. Because yeah, it's in the middle of the debate, if you like, let's say, 2,000 monks, and half of them are clapping their hands at the same time, you can imagine, it's quite noisy, right? So, yeah, it's a very intense way of analyzing. It's kind of analytic meditation. So if you don't analyze, then you don't improve. So that's why, very important. Yeah. So that's why we have to do analytical meditation. So we do concentration meditation in order not to get distracted, and analytical meditation that actually moves the mind. Only think, oh, I don't like anger, I don't like anxiety, I don't like fear. That by itself, it's good to have that intention, but it's not going to change yourself, right? You have to analyze. Why do we have to analyze? Because this analytical approach is going to change the mind. Yeah. Same with the destructive emotions. They use the same kind of aspect of the mind, as we just talked about. I don't like this person because of this. We have all these reasons lined up, and because of those reasons, we believe it's all true, and we accept this person has 90% faults and maybe 10 or no qualities, right? Yeah. So that means that also these destructive emotions are very sneaky. You know, they use this reasoning and they believe it's all true. You know, so that means that the capacity of the mind to analyze, we should use in a more constructive way to eliminate those destructive emotions. So that's the kind of introduction of how we're going to structure the course and, you know, make it a little bit more practical, as we're going to talk about. So, over the coming days. So then what we just talked about is kind of day-to-day life approach, right? So the Buddha not only talked about this, the Buddha went a little bit deeper, went and explained the 12 links. And the first link is called ignorance. Why did the Buddha start with ignorance? Because it's the root cause of the sufferings to Asuras. They say the afflictions or destructive emotions, anger, attachment, jealousy, pride, or in modern times, anxiety and fear, for example, they directly cause disturbance of mind. Person gets an emotional hijack, harm somebody else, right? You see there's a kind of mental attitude and a physical or verbal shout at a person. So it causes the other person to get disturbed and lose appetite, lose sleep, etc., etc. So that means initially there's a mental attitude which is reacted in physical or verbal behavior, right? So we're going to talk about those different types of karma, mental karma, physical, verbal. So that means there's an intention, a motivation, and an act. That's why in the beginning of the talk today also we decided to generate correct motivation. So important, because everything we do, everything we say, how we physically act, like this policeman in India giving a cake, birthday cake to this family, it's kind of based on the quality of mind, right? The other extreme of my friend in prison, based on strong anger and aversion, he killed another human being. Right? So you can see, based on these mental states, either positive or negative, we act physically or verbally. Some people they try to cheer other people up. Some people try to look ugly at others and say nasty things. There's an effect, right? There's an interrelationship. So that we're going to talk about as well. So we can see that it starts with a mental attitude. So that's why the Buddha puts so much emphasis on changing the mind. You see? Yeah. So, and then the Buddha said, the first link, ignorance. Why is ignorance so important to be understood? Because we just said that the destructive emotions, right, they directly cause, as we traditionally say, directly cause suffering, right? So you just explained, they cause mental suffering, you act physically, you cause harm to another person, you act verbally, you cause harm to another person. So this mental aspect of anger causes disturbed mind of yourself, you lose appetite, and then you start to worry again, I shouldn't have done this, I shouldn't have said this. And then your whole day is just gone, just from a few minutes of acting like that. The whole day is wasted. So you can see just a little bit of mental attitude can make such a big change in your whole day or weeks or life. So that means the mind is so important to be understood. So that's why this mental attitude. So then the Buddha said, the destructive emotions, anger, attachment, jealousy, pride, right? They had a direct cause of suffering. Mental, physical, and verbal aspects, right? Yeah. So that's the direct cause. The root cause is ignorance. Very interesting distinction. Direct cause, root cause. Because we can see, if the mind gets disturbed with irritation or anger, directly causes unpleasant feeling, right? Causes suffering. Yeah, so that's the direct cause. But that's rooted in something more substantial that has to be taken care of. That's ignorance. Misunderstanding reality. Yeah, so this ignorance, basically, it can be classified, as we want to talk about more tomorrow, from different points of view of Buddhist philosophy. Okay, so today I thought I'd keep it extremely simple as an introduction. But first we have to know, why is this ignorance the root cause of these destructive emotions to come up? That we have to understand. So that means that before and during destructive emotion like anger, attachment, jealousy, pride, fear, whatever disturbance of mind comes, there's a very concrete concept of I and mine, right? So that we can prove, I always use an example, it's not my only example, but it's a very good example. It's kind of, if I ask, now I only have a few people sitting here on social distance, the easygoing people, so I cannot really, I can ask all the whoever is there on the other side of the screen, please, everybody, come on, get angry, everybody. And then I see only smiles on the faces, so it's very difficult to let people get angry. But if I look at the faces, you look like this, look at where you're sitting in this room, terrible, you look like that, you act like this, Then the eye comes up, how dare you say this to me? I'm not like this. Then anger arises, you see? So that means that anger is rooted in a concrete concept of I am I. How dare this person say this to me? I'm not like that. No, how dare, it's not like that, it's not true. Or somebody criticizes you, very good example. You know? Then that concrete I comes up. So when somebody criticizes, normally we take revenge because we don't like the feeling. So we try to take revenge. You know, saying world leaders do the same thing. They're unhappy, you know, they take revenge, the other person takes revenge. Everywhere. But actually, that doesn't really solve the problem, right? Is it? It doesn't solve the problem. So that means if somebody criticizes you, actually we receive down the line, that person is incredibly kind. It's amazing. Why? Because not only you have an opportunity to practice patience, but it helps you to recognize the most difficult aspects of the Buddha's teaching, and is to recognize this concept of, you know, the object of negation, or what we call the ignorance we talk about, the huge transitory collection. Yeah? With this person being so kind, that eye comes up and you act. You know? So there's many other examples you can use, but you have to get some daily experience. How does it come up? You know? How does it appear? So that will take time. You don't get it in these 6 days. So His Holiness Dalai Lama, being very modest, of course, he says, studying emptiness for the last 6 decades, and I think slowly I start to understand it. So yeah, that's the kind of encouraging one way. But another time, it's also His Holiness, actually, His Holiness in the foreword, preface of Thupten Jinpa's book on the biography of Lama Tsongkhapa, someone's actually refers very interesting to his experience of emptiness. Right? Or if you read The Art of Happiness, there's one journalist who, through Lishi Lakula, he was the translator at the time, in the interview, he's going to talk a little bit about his experience of emptiness. Very moving. So, yeah. So that means that to recognize the object of refutation, or what this ignorance is, how does it appear? That's extremely important. So that's why we're going to spend some time on that as well. Why is that so important? Because, as you can see, because of this I, concrete I am mine, you get angry. Attachment arises, or fear arises. But I just mentioned when I was on the road from Maratika back to Kathmandu, and then the whole thing about fragments I didn't know about for a few weeks because there was no internet there. I mean, there was internet, but a very weak one I didn't really use. So that means then there's a fear of what's going on in the world, and then almost falling off the cliff. And it's kind of, it was an incredible nice meditation in the Jeep going backwards. A friend of mine with me, but sometimes just sitting down and then looking at the cliff, you know, almost falling off. And they drive fast. Luckily, the roads are not that good, otherwise they speed even more, you know. So, yeah, it's a really good experience. Because when you get close to that, you know, it's also very strong. Very strong. If you imagine falling off a cliff or high building or in a plane and the turbulence and you're going down, you know, very strong eye comes up. That's extremely important to recognize and experience. And in daily life, the person who criticizes you, who points out your mistakes, is basically extremely kind, can practice patience, you see your mistakes, if you don't see your mistakes, you never change, right? And then you get a recognition. Or, so actually, instead of getting angry at a person, actually, you say, lasso, empty battery. So you should say, yeah. And then you should just sit still and just meditate in the toilet or something, away from the person. Then it's a very good experience. So yeah, that's the sequence, right? So there's ignorance, then a destructive emotion, then an act. First, there's this concrete concept of I am I, then a destructive emotion comes up, and then we act verbally, physically, or mentally. You see? And there's disturbance. So that's a procedure extremely simplified today. Yeah, so I think if we do a short meditation on this, and then the questions and answers maybe we do tomorrow, right? Then, yeah, is that okay? I cannot
It's up to you, Geshla, that we could have them, a few if there are today. It's your choice.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so let's do a meditation for about 10 minutes. And then we go a little bit over time. Is that okay or not?
Yeah,
sorry. I'm a bit, I'm punctual. That's why I started on time. But I still have a little bit of Indian blood because of all the years of eating dal and rice. So that means that time-wise sometimes. Is it okay? Yeah, so let's do a meditation. If everybody is okay with the meditation on the other side. People not falling asleep already. I can only see a few faces, but maybe some people already. If you're on mute, then you can hear them sleeping. So yeah, try to relax. Yeah, so what I said before, not too relaxed, but yeah. Because if the mind is not relaxed, it's very difficult to meditate. So that's why. If it's too relaxed, then you fall asleep. If the mind is too agitated, it's like drinking too much coffee, then also you can't really think properly, right? So that means you have to have the balance, the middle way. So, yeah. So how to sit? People know how to sit? I mean, you can sit on a chair. I don't know what people sit in, but sit on the floor. You sit cross-legged, you know? So if you, anyway, that's another story. It's come too long. So wherever you sit, you know, the main thing is that the spine is straight, right? The head slightly bent forward. Okay? The crown of your head is in one line with your spine. Okay? Your eyes are just about to be closed. That's not too dark and too light. If your eyes are open, you get distracted. If you completely close them, there's dullness. Yeah? So it's either distraction or dullness. There's two things to be abandoned. Yeah? So that's why we just have the eyes a little bit open, a little bit light goes in. Okay? Your hands, you can put the right on top of the left and just put it on your lap. You don't have to sit like this. When we went to prison, then there were a few Indian youngsters. They were like, "Oh, meditation, yes." And they were like, "Sit like this, you know." And then, of course, then it doesn't really go right. So you have to sit straight but relaxed. There shouldn't be too much tension, otherwise it causes distraction. So, what I said before, we're going to do two meditations. One is concentration meditation. Yeah? So that means we need an object to concentrate on. Which is in this case, we use the breath. Yeah, so every in-breath, we count as one, out-breath as two, and then we count from 1 to 10, and then start over counting. Yeah, so then the only thing you're doing in the coming, 2 minutes, just to briefly, it's better to have quality than quantity. Yeah, if you have quality and quantity, it's the best, but initially, it's better to have quality. Make the session short. So you're gonna count the breath, and the rate of breathing is without force. Just breathe in and out through your nose without forcing it. And just be aware and count it. As soon as a thought comes up from yesterday or tomorrow, it's always the past or the future, try to not to follow that thought and leave the thought aside. And just the only thing you're doing is counting on the breath. Everything else can wait. So yeah, that's how to generate a kind of concentration. Yeah, so let's do that for about a minute or two. Yeah. So then every in-breath, count as one, out-breath as two, and then count from 1 to 10, and then start over counting. Yeah. So let's do that for about 2 minutes. All right, then when the mind is settled down a bit, then we do the analytical meditation and then try to analyze if it's really true, we just talked about. Is it really true that there is a kind of concrete concept of I am I that arises when somebody criticizes you for example, or when there's a strong affliction coming up. And if that strong affliction actually, or destructive emotion, causes disturbance of the mind or not. Is it really negative or not? How do we act verbally? How do we act physically? Yeah, the story of the prisoner, the story of the policeman organizing a birthday cake. You see how, what kind of effects the states of mind actually had on physical and verbal behaviors. So try to see how it was rooted in ignorance with this kind of negative state of thought, if it's true or not, and how the effects come from these kind of states of mind. Yeah? So try to take an example we talked about so that you feel comfortable with and analyze that for, let's say, about 2 or 3 minutes, if it's true or not, and why is it true or not. Yeah? So try to analyze that by using reasoning. So let's do that for about 3 minutes. So then if you've analyzed and come to a conclusion, right? So try to see if that's really true. There's this kind of concrete concept of I am mind that arises, and inflation arises, of course, disturbance of minds, and of course, you know, disturbing others by physical or verbal behaviors, and actually causes suffering. Try to come to that conclusion, and then focus on that conclusion for about a minute. We can stop. So yeah. That's basically, if you structure meditation like that, we did it very briefly, but it gives you at least a structure. So we're going to do every day. Concentration meditation, analytical meditation. You analyze, come to a conclusion, then you focus on that conclusion. That is kind of also combined analytical and concentration meditation. So that's gonna basically make the change. Because if you habituate yourself to something, and then you come to a conclusion, and you believe the conclusion is true by correct reasoning, then next time it becomes easier to generate that same thought process. Because you believe the same, if you look at the platform, you don't believe anymore you're moving, right, in the train. So in a similar way, in this meditation technique, we use it to move forward, right? So yeah, so we do it every day a little bit, so you get a little bit experience with that. Yeah? So yeah, so that's a little bit the short introduction. A bit longer than I initially expected. I thought I'd start a bit more with ignorance, but if there's a people who are quite new, then they get this in the beginning. And if you're quite new, then there's also a video uploaded of a talk I gave in Delhi. It's called 12 Links, Delhi, right? Tushita Delhi. It's kind of one of the shortest summaries I ever did, I think 1 hour or something, 1.5 hours. About the 12 links. So if you're quite new, then if you look at that video, it might be quite helpful to do that today. If you're already quite familiar with these aspects, then you can skip that if you want to, or if you have time, you can do, but then you can listen to the audio recordings, because the audio goes a little bit more into detail about the 12 links in relation with the drawings. And then tomorrow we're going to dive into the actual presentation of the text of the 12 links according to Melchior's text. Yeah. So then, with questions, Wendy, how?
Yes. If you have a question, you're welcome today to write it in chat. And from tomorrow onwards, you will receive an email with a Google form where you could put your questions. But if somebody has a quick question now and wants to just raise their hand whilst other people might be writing their question in chat. So anybody got specific, maybe a practical question in particular? Julie, I'll just unmute you. Thank you. Your question, please.
Oh, thank you. Hello, Geshe-la. Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah. That's a quick question. Is it important to count the in-breath, or is it okay to count the out-breath?
Ale. It's whatever. It's basically, it's designed to develop concentration, right? And you need an object for concentration. So it's either the in-breath or out-breath or both. It's not really a big deal. It's not, if you get uptight about what to choose, then becomes instruction, right? So you can choose.
Okay.
But it's traditionally been explained as in-breath out, in-breath one, out-breath two, etc., because it gives you more focus, because we breathe in before we breathe out, right? So that means it's easier for the mind to stay focused because there's little time in between the two. Yeah. Does it help?
I've been counting just the out breath.
You can, but if you count both, you keep your mind more tight, not tight in the sense of uptight, but you keep your mind more to an object, right? Because if you only count your out breath, then when you breathe in, there's a possibility of distraction. So if you count your in breath as well as your out breath, you keep counting, you keep more focused, right?
Ah, so I had misunderstood. So I've been counting just the out breath to 10, but you're saying to count in breath one, out breath two, or in breath.
I mean, it's not that fixed, right? If it's too difficult for you, you can play around. But whatever, you have to see what's beneficial for your mind and see if you don't get distracted and if you move forward.
Okay, thank you so much.
Susan, do you want to ask your question? How long should the breath exhale?
How long should the inhale and exhale be ideally? Should you be trying to lengthen it, or should there be, because it's affecting the nervous system. So how long is your inhale and exhale? And also, are you engaging the locks, the internal locks?
So the breathing process should be natural. If your in-breath is, wait for a while, then it becomes a distraction, right? So why is the breath being taken as an object? Because our emotions also relate with the breathing pattern, you know? So if you're tight and you breathe in and out, it helps to relax, right? The goal of meditation is not relaxation, but you need a certain state of mind to be relaxed. It's true, you know? Sometimes we get uptight and then, relax, stay down, breathe in, breathe out, and it becomes easier, right? So that means that's why the breath is being taken for us beginners. Yeah, we can take other objects. There's more advanced meditations where you take very subtle objects of concentration. But for a beginner, it's true. It helps to put down the mind to relax. So that's why the breathing process is being taken. And then the breathing process should be natural. Don't force it. Don't make the in-breath longer or the out-breath longer. Try to keep it balanced. Maybe one of the days we do the 9-round breathing exercise, which helps you to balance the in and out breath. Yeah. So,
could you teach some pranayama, please?
Sorry.
Could you please teach some pranayama breathing?
Yeah, I will do.
And talk a little bit about the internal locks as well, the engaging the bandhas.
Yeah, I don't go into too much detail because it's a very secret instruction of Naropa, but the general things can be taught in this way.
Thank you. Jill and I have a similar question. Jill, do you want to ask your question? How should we structure our day?
Hello, Geshe-la. How should we structure our days during this retreat? What is your guidance?
How to structure daily retreat?
I've not done one before.
Huh?
As I've not done one before, please.
Allez, how to structure a retreat? Yeah, so First of all, you have to know the time frame. If it's a weekend or a week or a month. So that's first of all you have to know. Then what you're going to meditate upon. It can be very secular, universal, as we just talked about now, or it can be, as we're going to talk about from tomorrow onwards, more structured in the Lamrim, right? So, sorry, if you do a structured Lamrim retreat, let's say you take about a week or half day, half a day for a week, something like that, or a whole week, full day, right? As example. Then how you structure, you do prayers, as we did in the beginning, where you feel comfortable with, you feel inspired by. Yeah, so it can be a Buddhist prayer, it can be a Christian prayer, it can be anything. It's not, you know, there's a kind of universal aspect, right? So if it's a Buddhist prayer, then you can do things that you find moving, you know, that helps you to feel inspired. Yeah, so then there's a possibility we're going to do one of the days as well, is to receive nectar lights, you know, to purify and get the right conditions to meditate. So we don't worry, we're going to explain how to do it. And then you structure those meditations throughout the day, right? So you have either 4 or 6 sessions or 8 sessions. So it's very important to make a structure. When I do retreats, remember Fabienne, who lives next to me, she knows it's like the clock probably because of her time, like this, you know, breakfast this time, exercise this time, it's kind of a clock. So that helps my mind to keep focused, right? So if you keep your sessions and be disciplined, it becomes easier. Same in monastic institution. If you just follow discipline without arguing and without, it becomes very easy. So that means you have to discipline, right? So whatever time you have, you divide your day over sessions, you formally sit, you do the same thing as we did with prayers, you do concentration meditation, you do analytical meditation, right? So the analytical meditation you structure. Right, we did now just kind of ID, but if you do a Lamrim retreat or you do a retreat on the 12 links, as we will do this time, then you take one aspect a day or one aspect of 2 sessions or one, for example, the 12 links, right? We're going to talk about the 12 links. So one session or 2 sessions in the first day, you meditate on ignorance. What is ignorance? How does it appear? Right. Then the next 2 sessions of the day, you go to the next link. What is karma? What is action? How does physical and verbal behaviors come about? The analyzing. Then the 3rd session, etc. You structure. You just write it down for yourself and outline. So you can do the whole Lamrim or part of the Lamrim. So after these kind of 6 days we have together, you probably get a little bit of idea how to structure it. Yeah? So if you be by yourself, it's very important to discipline yourself. Make a schedule. Mm-hmm. Time frame. I wake up this time. I'm very late always because I go to bed too late. Don't follow my example. You go to bed early and you go wake up early. Yeah, in a monastic institution, that's my habit. I'm still in the same kind of cycle. You don't go to bed early. You don't go to wake up too early. You know. So, yeah. Last night, same thing. I was walking yesterday, got late, and then I was home in teaching live streams. I just sleep in, and then I woke up anyway. They don't do that. You know, just make a structure, write it clear. You know, time frame. Sessions, the subjects in each session, and you go to a particular subject throughout the week or throughout the weekend. Yeah.
Anything?
Helpful or not too much?
Yes, that's good. But anything we shouldn't do, like are we going to be mostly silent, avoiding conversation, avoiding television, etc., etc.?
Don't go to the bar or something.
Not leaving the house.
What you shouldn't do is try to avoid distraction, right? So in the breaks, don't. Like now also for me, same thing. In retreat, I had to call my mother because she's alone at home. She's in lockdown. I have a youngster I have to take care of in the monastery. He's in lockdown. So normally I'm very strict with retreat, no internet. And, you know, I put everything aside, like in Maratika, for example. But then last retreat was like 2 months. I think I have to call my mother now and come. And so, you know, call her or write her email. But try to discipline, you know? Especially social media. Forget it. Mobile phones switch off. You know, that's, you have to, because our mind is so easily distracted. And if you watch something and you sit and you try to analyze, then your meditation is meditating on the news and not on the subject, right? So then the mind gets distracted. And so you have to, that's what I said in the beginning, we have the treat of the body, meaning don't go out, you know, in town, you know, just stay in your room, right? Then we have the verbal retreat. Don't talk too much. When I'm in retreat here, incredible conditions here in Jamyang, thanks to the team here. So I don't have to talk with people. I just stay in my room, have the food, and don't talk myself. And for a month or two, I just don't talk. So only get my mother on the phone. But yeah, if you take that away also, then because if you stop physical and verbal activity, it's easier to get into, you know, what you're studying or what you're meditating upon. But you have to be careful. If you cannot do it, if you get too tight by being alone, being silent, then it's better just to go out to the garden or, you know, go for a walk or talk with somebody. You have to be very skillful, you know. So that means that the mind should be relaxed with focus. So that's a very important aspect. So you have to balance. In the beginning, when I did my first retreat, I was also too strict. So that was what's called doom. And the retreat was not very successful, I tell you. So then after the retreat, I totally changed. And now I'm too relaxed and I'm getting too lazy. But at least, it's, you know, the mind is, when you think about things, it's easier. Yeah? So that means that, yeah, you have to have a balance. What you cannot, some people go in silence and then they have to see people, but they cannot talk. Then you can see the mind gets tight, you know. So when I hear, I be in silence because I can do that. When I'm in a monastery in our house group, I have to go to the kitchen on the other side of the building and I have to see people, and I'm just like that, then it disturbs more than the benefit of the silence, right? So then I'm easier. And so you see you have to see the boundaries where you are as well. Yeah?
Thank you.
Okay.
Guy, did you want to add anything about that question?
It's not me, there's someone else called Diane. Oh,
a different Diane, sorry. And I think that any more questions? No. Okay, I think for now we will leave the questions until tomorrow.
Sure.
So thank you everybody who contributed, and thank you Geshla for answering the question so clearly.
Sure.
Yes, so time for prayers. And
Is it okay? People have time?
Yeah.
I can't hear the people because if you people here in the hall, they say yes or no, but everybody is muted, so I don't know.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, yeah. So if you open the prayer booklets or can open. So we do the final Lamrim dedication prayer, and then we do a few others after. Page number 35.
Thank you.
It's called the final Lamrim prayer. So we did a Lamrim prayer in the beginning and we do one in the end. Throughout the coming days we can see and place it within the Lamrim. Yeah? Yeah. So then think that dedication basically is a prayer, but not just a prayer, is a prayer that dedicates the merits or the good deeds we've done. So we say we have an intention, we do something positive, and then we dedicate in a particular direction. So it means dedication means to direct the mind, the positive aspects in a way up in our spiritual development, either precious human rebirth, liberation or enlightenment, or the things we just talked about today, changing the mind, that helps. Prayers, I did some reading about the benefits of prayers. It's very interesting research being done with Christian nuns praying for mothers in Korea who didn't know they were prayed for, and was a control group, a very scientific project. And the data shows that there's a significance in people who were prayed for and were not prayed for. Very interesting. And that's just, it's for us good to know, the capacity of the mind goes beyond the limitations of the body, right? So, yes, for us, as spiritual practitioner, very important to pray to go in a different direction. And then you can see it helps to build courage. We have a problem now, so we just saw it. If you have a problem, you can solve it, you solve it, not to worry. If you have a problem, but you cannot solve it, because it's not within your capacity to do anything, if you make a strong prayer, it becomes very strong. So, not now possible, in the future may I be able to do this. You have a positive attitude, It helps. Yeah. So there's many benefits of doing prayers and dedications. No time to talk about more. So try to think about the meaning when you read the words. Yeah. for my two collections or two types of merits, past the space that I've amassed from working with effort that is practiced for a great length of time. May I become a chief leading Buddha for all those whose mind is the mind of my ignorance. Even if I do not reach the states, may I be held in love and compassion for my life's tradition. May I find the best of complete greater parts of the teachings, and may I please the Buddhas by my practice. Using skillful means, drawn by the strong force of compassion, may I clear the darkness from the minds of all beings. With the points of the parts lying between them, may I behold the Buddhist teachings for a very long time. With my heart going out with great compassion, in whatever direction the most precious teachings have not yet spread or once spread have declined, may I reveal this treasure of happiness and ease. May the minds of those who wish for liberation be granted boundless peace, and the Buddha's deeds be nourished for a long time. By even this great path to enlightenment completed due to the victorious conduct of the Buddhas and their sons. May all humans and non-human beings who eliminate diversity and create conflictive conditions for practicing the action paths never be parted in any of their lives from the pure paths prayed by the Buddhas. Whenever someone makes effort to act in accordance with the tenfold Mahayana virtuous practices, may always be assisted by the mighty ones and may notion of prosperity spread everywhere. So then we make it short here. So then think that whatever collection of positive things we've done today to develop and to help others to develop, we try to dedicate that all sentient beings without exception generate positive states of mind, like love and kindness, compassion. Yeah. So we try to dedicate in that direction. Chanjo, Sanjo, Rinpoche, Magye, Panam, Gyeguche, Gyenba, Namba, Neva, Gone, Konde. And also that oneself, all sentient beings, understand reality, and by understand this reality, eliminates ignorance and destructive emotions, yeah, as we just talked about, because they're not in constant reality, but understanding reality, and the reality of emptiness, as we're going to talk about, may it be generated in the mind of all sentient beings without exception, may it never decrease, but increase. Toni Tawa Rinpoche Magye Panang Yiguchi Yeva Nyamba Neva Yang Tone. Also try to dedicate for the spreading of these kind of teachings in all directions, they want self and all sentient beings in every part from these kind of special teachings. Also try to dedicate for the teachers. Teach these kind of teachings, like so is Dharma, Lama Sopa Rinpoche, and all the true teachings, teachings part to enlightenment, and they have long and healthy lives, and all the holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And then oneself, all sentient beings in his future lifetimes may be parted from these precious teachers and quickly progress from the stage of part to enlightenment and the state of Vajradhara we achieved. Okay, thank you very much. Merci beaucoup. For those who are, I'm in French. Vielen Dank. So thank you very much, and then see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. I think everybody's in the same place.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Geshe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See
you tomorrow.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Everybody's extinct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, yeah. Was it game or not?